You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. KZUU is made possible in part by Heroes in Sports, located at 245 Northeast Kamiakin Street. Pullman's Hometown Deli offers a variety of sandwiches, soups, and salads, with catering available. For more information, contact Heroes in Sports at 509-334-5423. Had a bad weekend? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WSU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need help, stop by their office in Annex Room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, and Friday, 9 to 1. The High School Equivalency Program at WSU welcomes volunteers to participate as tutors for adult GED students. Fluent Spanish speakers are especially needed. This is a wonderful opportunity to acquire teaching experience. Contact Priscilla Haystay at 335-5652 or go to Cleveland Halls, room 21 to 23 for more information. The Whitman County Humane Society is in need of volunteers. Located in Pullman, the shelter is dedicated to caring for stray, abandoned, and abused animals. Opportunities include walking, feeding, and grooming the animals. For more information, call the shelter at 332-3422 or visit their website at www.whitmanpets.org. The dogs and the cats will thank you with their unconditional love. And if Tom was here on time, I would have allowed him to read the PSAs because he seems to do such a great job with them. But he's just now getting here, and I was actually going to call him when I played the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. But, because I was a little worried that he might be in the hospital or something like that after last week. So anyway, stay tuned. We're going to talk a little bit about maybe some eco-terrorism that's taking place currently over in the Seattle area. We also have the new WSU ordinance that was talked about in the news on the newspaper. I believe it was Friday's edition of the Daily Evergreen. And see what else fun stuff we got going on. Possibly Pack and Heat. Talk to you later. And in the meantime, the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. Welcome back. And once again, the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. Tom, it's good to see you. How was your weekend?
You too, Scotty. It was pretty good.
What did you do?
Low key.
Yeah? What did you do?
Well, mostly just hung out, watched movies. Ran a half marathon on Saturday morning.
Only a half marathon?
It was only a half of a marathon.
That sounds sort of lazy. You're like about the halfway point. You're like, I'm sort of tired of this now. Yeah. I've been doing the same thing for the last 20 minutes. I think I'll stop.
I wish it only took me 20 minutes to run a half marathon. That'd be nice.
That's like 13 miles?
Yeah, it's like 13.1 miles. Right.
That's a fair amount of running.
Yeah.
Bo show.
Yep.
Alrighty.
How about you?
Oh, I just hit my microphone with my headphone. That probably didn't sound very good. I was very busy this weekend. My truck needed to have a bath, so I decided to give it a wash. Yeah. And I was like, man, what am I going to do tonight? Because there's, you know, I already had my Saturday planned for most of the day, and I'm like, well,
This is Friday night.
So I'm like, well, maybe I'll just go and I need an oil change on my truck. And I was like, maybe I'll go buy a new one. You know,
buy a new truck?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because then I don't have to get the oil change.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's pretty intuitive. Oh, very. So I was like, well, I'll go to the car dealership and take a look. Actually, the real reason is because I'm getting a motorhome.
Really?
Well, it's my parents' old motorhome, but I'm buying it from them.
Oh, okay.
And I bought the truck I have now. I've had since October. I got that an upgrade from a 1500 to a 2500 Dodge, from a short box to a long box. Mm-hmm. They're both quad cabs. But the reason why I did that is because I wanted to get a camper. And now that I'm buying a motorhome, I don't need such a huge truck for the camper. So I'm thinking about going back to a 1500, which is a little bit of a smaller truck. It drives a little bit more like a car on the roadway.
Yeah.
And I, for what I haul, it would do the job. So I'm thinking about going back
better to a better mileage.
It'd be a little bit better. I think probably about 4 miles a gallon better, possibly.
Every
little bit helps. But, or the other option would be maybe looking at a Dakota, or you have an Exploder, right?
Yeah, I've got an Explorer.
And I was thinking about getting one, possibly. I saw one online, and I'm going to probably take a look at it today. And just, what year is yours?
It's a 93. It's got a...
That thing's older than you.
Yeah. Well, not exactly, but it's got like 185,000 miles on it now.
Wow.
I haven't had that. We had one major problem, had to get the transmission replaced, but other than that, I mean...
It's been a pretty good rig for you.
Yeah. I think it might be a Republican, just because it like it's old and it's white and it veers rightward on the road. Like if I'm just holding the steering wheel steady, it will veer right. And also the CD player only works if I'm turning right. So like if I get on the freeway and I get on one of those clover leaf patterns and I'm taking a long right turn, I can listen to the CD player for maybe 30 seconds or however long it takes me. But then it will go out. But other than that. It's pretty good. I mean, it gets pretty terrible, the gas mileage, but...
Really? What do you get?
Like, 14 on the highways.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, but it's a 93, yeah. Though, okay. So, I mean...
Yeah, sure my truck right now gets about 10.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Well, you might want to think about the Escape. I mean, it's a little bit...
No.
No?
No, that's a coffin on wheels.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Does it have a bad safety rating?
I don't know. It's small. Therefore, it's a coffin on wheels. I'm prejudiced against small vehicles, because the way I see it is... granted, they might have good safety ratings, and I've seen some video footage of like these ultra tiny cars that barely fit a person in them have horrific looking crashes, and the passenger compartment itself is fine. But
yeah, like the smart cars, they're actually surprisingly safe. The ones they have
it's just I'm not really ready to step into a small car because I need the space. I have at any given time, I have probably about a 2 by 3 foot tote full of supplies for one of my jobs, and then I have two huge duffel bags for supplies from one of my jobs, and then I have another huge bag with supplies from another job, and I always have to keep those with me.
Okay.
And so I have those in the vehicle all the time, and they sit in the back seat of the truck, which works unless I have 5 people riding with me. So one of the things about the Explorer that would be nice is that I could use, like, the back area to put that stuff. Then I don't have to worry about taking it in and out all the time, and I'd still have my seats available for passengers. My mom has a 01 Explorer, and I've driven that before. The only thing is it doesn't seem to have the headroom that my truck does. And I used to have a Dakota. And I was almost looking at one of those again, but it's the same thing. It doesn't seem to have the headroom. And maybe I'm just so used to being in in one of the big, huge trucks that going into something smaller, I'd have to get used to the headroom. I mean, it's like you put your head up really high and your head's like touching the top of the roof, and I don't like that too much.
Mine doesn't ever touch, but I'm kind of
I was going to say.
A little bit vertically challenged department.
There you go. But so I was... I was thinking about going to see the trucks and stuff, and then about 5 o'clock, the tone... Isn't that a fun little tangent we're on? Anyway, the tones go off for District 12 was going to have they're having a fire outside of Pullman that you may or may not have heard about. It was a big, huge structure fire. House was burning down. Well, anyway, I ended up calling one of the fire departments that I work with and saying, hey, since you guys are heading out that way, if you grab my stuff from the station, I'll meet you there. So I drove to the scene, and then I helped with the water shuttle, which essentially we had 5-6 tanker trucks going between Pullman and the place where the fire was back and forth.
Was it a house?
It was a house. Wow. Dumping water into water tanks. And in order to be able to fight it, because there's no hydrant system in the county.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really strange when you sometimes people don't really think about that. When there's a fire, they think, well, the fire department comes and they'll put it out. Well, the fire department needs water. And the only water source out there are wells, but wells typically aren't going to be enough to put enough water on the fire. And you need a lot of water. So we're talking about 1,500 to 3,000 gallon tankers dumping water into this one tank, and it's getting sucked out just about as quickly as you're putting it in there.
Wow.
So you got this water shuttle going on. So you have one tanker dumping, two in line to dump, and then once he dumps, he's running off to Pullman to grab more water to come back and get in line to dump again.
Huh.
So you put.
Did they find out what caused the fire?
As far as I know, they haven't heard. They haven't. The news this morning said that they were still investigating it, and so I don't know what caused it. But anyway, so that's what I ended up doing Friday instead of the car shopping.
Right.
And so my Friday was filled up, and then Saturday I was helping teach a class somewhere here in the county, pretty much the whole entire day. And then after that was done,
What was the class about?
It was teaching people stuff.
Okay.
Fine. And then from there, we went to the rec center, and I was doing some cardio stuff. And then as I was walking out of there, the two of the guys with the Ghostbusters vacuum packs on.
What?
Do you ever go to the rec center?
Not really.
Oh, okay. Well, they have these backpacks that they carry. They're vacuums on backpacks. And then they have, like, the wand that they'll just walk around with.
Like the maintenance people do?
Well, like the workers there.
Okay.
And so there's these two, obviously they're students, and they're walking around. I sort of think of them as Ghostbuster packs because they sort of remind me of that. Anyway,
yeah,
they're walking around.
What you're talking about.
And they're, one of them's like, man, I wonder what it would have been like to be 18 in the 90s. Like, yeah, I wonder what that was like. So just now I was in here just before us was Ted Powers, and we were talking about, you know, he's like, well, I don't see how it'd be much different. I said, yeah, it wasn't a lot different, but there are some differences. And I said, yeah, I think one of the biggest ones, and, you know, he pointed out, is technology, cell phones. Portable music devices. You know, you had Walkmans and stuff where you listen to your cassette.
I had one of those.
But, I mean, iPods have made such, or any MP3 players made such a huge explosion. You can't walk around without seeing tons of people with headphones in their ears. You can't walk around without hearing people talking on their cell phones. That just never happened before. Yeah. I mean, the social aspect of the interactions of, you know, like walking around on campus, you just don't have quite the social interactions anymore because so many people are sort of off in their little compartmentalized world. And Ted said something that really cracked me up, but I mean, it was a good point. He goes, you know, I think to combat this, everybody should start smoking. And I was like, everybody should start smoking. He goes, yeah, you know, when people are smoking, they have to go outside to smoke, and they always get in a big group, and they also, you know, they sit there and they talk while they're smoking. And, you know, it's a great way of, you know, keeping the social aspect alive. And, of course, you know, the joke in there is the fact that if people started smoking, we'd have all sorts of other problems going on. But just like, I mean, but yeah. Overall, the idea that, you know, that would be an activity that would get people to socialize.
Yeah, it's definitely true. Actually, last summer I worked with a lot of people from the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And, you know, smoking is really big.
Oh, really?
Almost everybody smokes. And it was kind of interesting because my coworkers that, you know, my American coworkers who smoked had a much deeper connection almost immediately.
Really?
With the Middle Easterners we were temporarily working with just because they, you know, spent their smoke breaks together. And so they kind of had almost formed a bond through that.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it was kind of interesting.
So then after that, I hit the casino. A friend of mine works there, and I was going to chat with him for a little while, so there's some stuff I wanted to talk to him about, and I decided to bring $40 along to leave there.
Yeah.
And I did leave it there.
Well done.
Thank you. And then Sunday I spent, I was at the women's basketball game.
Yeah.
And then I did a lot of work around the house. Well, I shouldn't say a lot. I did some work around the house. I cleaned off the sidewalks, and I was reading the the Pullman City ordinances, and we'll get into that in one of our topics here. But,
okay.
Good thing I did what I did this weekend because I am now following the ordinance as I should be.
You have to clean out your sidewalk.
Yeah, the sidewalks. You have to have it free of gravel and stuff too. And I didn't know this. There was gravel and whatnot on the sidewalk left over from all the snow.
Yeah,
and
there's gravel everywhere in Pullman. Right now, it's just like,
yeah,
it's pretty ridiculous.
It's like somebody country like, wow, I didn't know Pullman had so many graveled roads. It's like, no, we don't.
Yeah. You can't even see the lines. I mean, for a while.
Yeah, they're sanded off. Pretty much. That's pretty much a yearly thing, though. They almost have to, every single year, they have to repaint the lines. But
there's got to be a better way to do that. You'd think that, you know.
Yeah, just let people guess. What
anyway, yeah.
Cut down on the number of DUI arrests. He was driving on the line. What line?
Yeah.
So,
no kidding.
Then... So I cleaned off my sidewalk, cleaned my driveway out, you know, made it look real nice, got the laundry done, all that kind of stuff. I did something in the evening, too. What did I do in the evening? I did something in the evening because I know I had to drive back home from wherever I was. Isn't that funny? It's less than 24 hours ago, and I can't even remember what it was.
It's kind of scary, right?
It is? Oh, that's what it was. I was in the poker tournament at Zeppo's.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
How'd you do?
Do you play poker?
I've played before.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Well, maybe when I have the games over at my house, I'll invite you over.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think you just want to take my money.
No. I like to play cards, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
So.
How'd you do in the tournament?
I went out on the bubble.
I'm not sure what that means.
That means that if I had lasted one more person, I would have won money.
Oh.
So essentially, they paid, say, the top X number of spots.
Right.
I went X plus one.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I was doing okay. They actually, Sundays used to be free rolls up there, which means essentially it would be, they would guarantee a $200 prize pot, and then you could play for free. And then if you wanted to do a $10 rebuy, you could, and that made the prize pot bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
Well, they stopped doing that as of, I think, this week. This was like the first week they did a new format, which now it's a $10 buy-in and $10 rebuy. So you have to pay to get into it to begin with. It's not just a free roll anymore. So the number of people who went to play in it that had been numbering in the 50s for 36 seats was down to about, 17 or 18 people showed up.
It seems like the level of competition might be higher if you don't have people that are just, playing out of because it's free.
Yeah. Sure. And you always – it seems like the final table in a lot of ways were almost – I mean, there was a handful of guys that were there at the final table all the time.
Yeah.
And so I'm playing along and I wasn't doing – I mean, I was mediocre, and then the guy who's dealing, he comes over and plays at my place, and I'm like, hey, Brian – do I have to ask you for a good hand once in a while, or are you just going to deal me one?
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you wanted a good hand. I'd appreciate one. So finally, I get a decent hand and won a little bit of money. And up until then, I'd been pretty much just losing blinds because I wasn't staying in on anything.
Yeah.
And then finally, he was starting to deal me some good hands. I'm building a little bit of a stack, and then he trades out dealers. I'm like, Brian, you're just starting to do good for me. Now you're leaving. And my first hand... pocket kings. So I'm like, say, sayonara, Brian.
Yeah.
Don't let the butt hit you in the door, hit you in the butt on the way out. So I got a pair of kings. Next hand, pair of sevens. And I didn't. I raised on the pair of kings, of course. On the sevens, I wasn't overly proud of. Some guys probably would have pushed pretty hard on them. I was like, I've seen so many times that, a middle pair, I guess part of it you could say, well, if you push really hard, the guys who have, the king scrub or the ace scrub might get out of there because they don't want to, get hit by somebody who's strong. But I find that what happens is that there's always that one guy that does call, and then his overcard hits, and I end up losing anyway, and I lost a ton of money. So
yeah.
I play more conservative with mid pairs. And so I have a pair of sevens. And the flop comes 7-7-10. Quad sevens on the flop.
Oh.
And I'm last to act. So it's perfect. I don't have to come out shooting or anything. And this one, check, this lady, she bets 1,000. I call her. Because she's, the way I see it, she's starting to do the betting for me. So I'm going to let her continue betting sort of until the end. Because the way I figure it is, this pretty much sewed up. I mean, there's a chance of her coming back or somebody else. But I mean, right now, I have.
Four sevens.
Yeah.
It seems pretty unlikely.
Right. So I let her bet, and I'm figuring that maybe after the first bet, she'll really get brave and put a lot of money in there or something like that. So I'm going to let her bet along, and I'll just call. And I called, a couple guys fold out. Next time around, she checks. So I'm like, okay, now she's weak. I'm going to have to bet something, so I want to get some out of her. So I put 1,000 in, which was the minimum at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls that. And then last card comes out, doesn't do anything to help her. She checks. I bet 3,000 because I figured if I went all in, she'd fold in a heartbeat. If I went 3,000, that was definitely a pretty good value bet because there was a fair amount of money in the pot. I figured for 3,000, if she thought she had a chance, problem was is that there was a possible flush on the board, and she saw that, and she thought I might have a flush.
Oh.
So that's why she folded out. Mm-hmm. When in reality, I had quad sevens.
And yeah.
Of course, I didn't show. I mean, a lot of people, when they get quads or whatever, they'll show everybody, you got quads. But I'm like, in the middle of the tournament, I don't want people to see how I'm playing my cards.
Yeah.
I folded them away. Nobody knew. Not till the end. So anyway.
Well, I know now.
Yes, you do. And all our listeners know. So anyway, that was my weekend. It was actually quite busy and full of stuff. So now that the weekday is here, I can relax.
Yeah.
I can start relaxing and not doing stuff.
Well, talk about this ecoterrorism thing in Seattle.
Okay. So, we had, I guess, the two things that I was sort of hoping to touch on today. And if you want to join in on the conversation, you can reach us on the phone at 335-2207 on the web at www.kzuu.org and on our show's website, www.thepes.com. So anyway, there was, first off, the Daily Evergreen. They had an article about the Pullman police trying to ensure College Hill cleanliness. And it's not just College Hill cleanliness. It's cleanliness throughout the city of Pullman. It's not a College Hill only thing. It's just that that's where the problem is. And you can see it. If you ever go up on campus, you live right in that area. So I'm sure you've walked around and you've seen just yards looking full of trash and litter and stuff. And as a matter of fact, if you look in the... I think you have the there it is right there, the evergreen right in front of you. If you open it up, that picture there, the guy wearing the pink robe.
Yeah.
If you take a look at the background of his photo, now granted the snow just melted and everything like that, but the leaves have been there for how long?
Forever.
I mean, take a look at that. You can't even see green because it's all brown from the leaves. You know what I mean? It's things like that that people really ought to be keeping up with and taking care of. I mean, you go out there for one day with the rake and you clean up your yard.
I think some of the problem might be that this is not an apology for that, obviously, but I think like a lot of people are renting, so they don't feel like, you know, they don't keep it up.
Right, but
I mean, that's not to say that they shouldn't. It's just like kind of when you rent a rental car, you never like get it washed or anything. You know what I mean?
Sure. And you know, that's where the people who own the house, that's where they need to come in and say, hey, you know what? As part of the lease agreement. Now, if it's an apartment complex, it's one thing because the apartment people should be taking care of that.
Yeah.
But if you're renting a house, that ought to be one thing that's in the contract, that you will maintain the yard. And I think most of them have it in there. It's just that the landlords typically don't enforce it or enforce it very well.
Yeah.
So, so there's that I wanted to touch on a little bit. And actually, there's a third subject that I wanted to touch on that I didn't have in here at all. And the other one was about the ELF, the Earth Liberation Front, and they're possibly being responsible for burning down houses in the Seattle area. And also, just real quickly, let me ask you a question.
What's up?
Do you believe that students...
Sounds like the Socratic method at work.
Do you believe that the students should have a right to defend themselves with any legal means?
Are you referring to the guns on campus?
I'm asking you a simple question. Whatever you infer from there is your inference.
Uh-huh.
I am asking you, do you think the students should be able to defend themselves by any legal means?
Yeah. What do you think, Scotty?
No. You're not putting this one on me. You answer it yourself.
Well, I know exactly where you're going with this, so I'm kind of reluctant to you know, give the answer you want.
About the answer I want. I want your answer.
Well, you're talking about concealed carry
on campus. I am talking about Tom, the man across from me.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's a good idea in theory. having concealed carry on campus
What about OC? A taser.
I'm not sure what that is.
More or less mace.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment.
Okay.
So I'm a proponent of concealed carry on campus.
Okay.
If that's what you were really asking.
I was asking if you think students should be able to protect themselves.
That's not what you're really asking.
No. Wait. Where did my words defer? I mean, seriously, I'm like,
I know you too well. I know exactly where you're heading with this.
So, I mean, I guess the words that I'm using, the words out of my mouth are, should students be able to protect themselves with any legal means? And you think that I have an ulterior motive to this question? That almost hurts me.
I can see you're really torn up about it.
So anyway.
What are your thoughts on the subject, Scotty?
I think people should be able to protect themselves with any legal means.
Mm-hmm.
By all means.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, seriously, if you were to say no, you're essentially saying, by all means, I think that in certain circumstances, people should be able to get shot and killed, or people should be able to get stabbed and killed, or people should be able to be beaten up to a bloody pulp, because by all means, they shouldn't be able to protect themselves under certain circumstances. That'd be an asinine statement now, wouldn't it?
Probably, yeah.
If you don't answer my question with a yes, that's what you're saying.
I'm not really familiar with the reason I hesitated was I was not really familiar with the regulations on assault weapons in Washington State. Can you carry them openly?
I don't know.
You're not sure?
I know in Idaho
you are allowed to carry like an AK-47 openly, but I'm not sure about Washington State.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like that might be kind of, if only, you know, a slight distraction in class. You know,
with a gun strapped to their back
If you've got like an AR-15.
Well, it's funny, you know, you talk about that. I had this one thing, the difference between schools in the 50s and the 90s or something like that, or the 2000s.
You're reading this online?
Yeah. And I was going to share this, but I didn't bring it, and it was a while back. Anyway, one of them was, in the 50s, a student went to school with a gun rack and a gun in it, and the principal went out to see the gun, and they talked hunting stories. In the 2000s, a student brings a gun to school, they have a lockdown, they have a SWAT team show up, and the student gets expelled from school.
Yeah.
You know, it's just some of the differences in the way, you know, things were perceived back then and now. But anyway, yeah, I was thinking about that on the way in, coming into the studio. So it's like, you know, I believe that students should have a right to defend themselves with any legal means.
Yeah.
It shouldn't matter that they're on a campus. Shouldn't matter that they're near a campus. If I am being attacked in any way, shape, or form, I should be able to defend myself.
It does seem a little weird to me that, I mean, if I am across the street from the bookie, you know, at Valhalla, I can have my, you know, my pistol strapped on. But if I cross the street, then I can't. I mean, it seems a little. It's not like that. There's like an. I mean, the WSU campus isn't a nuclear reactor or anything like that. It's not like. No. But I understand the intent of the regulation, but it just seems a little weird.
Yes, as long as you feel good about yourself with the intent on the regulation, then it's okay to put into force. Because seriously, it's about feeling good. Oh, didn't we do something? We really helped because we put some sort of law on
the
books.
That's how politics works, Scotty.
I know, isn't it that? Okay, so anyway, the ELF, the Animal Liberation... Oops, that's the ALF. The ELF, the Earth Liberation...
Is there also an ALF?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there's.
What if they have similar membership?
They probably have the same membership. Or there's probably some overlap. But you got the Earth Liberation Front and then the Animal Liberation Front.
Yeah.
And the ELF are, well... It hasn't been officially said, but they're possibly responsible because a big sign was found with ELF put on it. And there's a message on there saying, built green? Question mark. Nope, black. And this was where five houses were torched. Five houses on the Street of Dreams. And what had and why they said built green? Question mark. Nope, black. Is because supposedly these houses in this particular Street of Dreams were... built with green thoughts and aspects in mind. This was one of the quotations from the article from the Seattle PI.
Yeah.
Said, one of the people involved in the 2007 Street of Dreams said the homes used built green standards, such as water pervious sidewalks, super insulated walls and windows, and products made with recycled materials, such as carpet pads. Advertising for last summer's Street of Dreams show focused on the environmentally friendly aspects of the homes, which were smaller than some of the huge houses featured in years past. And this part didn't have the house sizes, but the house sizes from another part of the article said they're about 4,250 to 4,700 square feet, and these were smaller than the other houses. Now, you're asking about ALF, A-L-F, the Animal Liberation Front. In 1991, they actually struck WSU here and did some.
What'd they do?
Well, they're big time against...
to free the bears?
No. animal research. Any kind of research that deals with animals, they're big time against that. And they did some stuff there. And I believe it was the ELF, the Earth Liberation Front. They're the ones who caused like $7 or $9 million damage at UW a couple years back.
Didn't they torch some Hummers as well? Or is that someone else?
I don't know. I haven't heard about that. But I guess what I was thinking about as far as the ELF torching the houses, I was like, how is that helping the environment in any way, shape, or form?
It's like a big CO2 footprint. Arson is one of the most, you know.
They're probably going to buy some carbon offsets today. Carbon offsets. Purpose?
Arson.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
It seems like a really weird target. I mean, it seems like that would really polarize green community. I mean, it seems like I'm not going to pretend to understand the reasons behind that, but it seems like a very, very, very odd choice of target.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, houses that are supposed to be built green. I mean, there's so many houses that, you know, are being built right now that aren't being built with even, you know, thought given to that. It seems like that would be the target of choice. But
sure,
if you were into terrorism, I don't know. You know.
Yeah. Now, would you call these environmentalist extremists, or would you call them eco-terrorists?
I don't think I'd put the eco in front of terrorists. I mean, yeah.
You just call them terrorists?
Probably.
Okay. I'm just curious. I mean, eco-terrorism...
The definition, there's a political goal, and they're targeting civilians.
Yeah. The yeah, I was going to say the eco-terrorism is actually a was coined, and some people are really against the word eco-terrorism because what they believe is that the usage of the word eco-terrorism makes people. It's a very polarizing word, as you were sort of pointing out, just the idea of using the word terrorism to begin with. And then, you know, obviously you're throwing eco in front of it to, you know, sort of differentiate this kind of terrorism versus, you know, the terrorism that we're all sort of acquainted with, which might be people strapping bombs to themselves and going to sidewalk cafes and killing people at weddings or funerals or whatever else.
Well, suicide terrorism is just, you know, one tactic.
Of course. I mean, of course. But typically, most people, I think, usually think of terrorism as something that's targeted towards people. You know, terrorists typically terrorize people by targeting them with the possibility of death.
Right.
Whereas an eco-terrorist, typically somebody like this, usually targets property.
Right.
And but they don't...
The intent is the same. It's still, you know, terror.
Sure.
It's still to spread terror.
Sure. So, I guess what I was thinking about with this is, I mean, first off, it's just sort of an angering point to think about these people who are supposedly environmentalist champions or whatever their thoughts are, wherever they're coming from, to sit here and torch houses. It's like, have you seen the amount of smoke that comes off of one of those? And think about, like, especially the kind of smoke that is in a lot of the synthetics that go into houses today.
Yeah,
horrible, nasty smokes that are getting put out everywhere. Whether they like the size of the houses or whatever else or not, you know, people in America or anywhere else that have the rights have the right to have the house that they size. So what I find funny about it is, first off, they're putting off all these pollutants into the air because they're burning down the houses. Then you, on top of that, you put people's lives in danger by the people who are responding to the call, plus the untold thousands, tens of thousands of gallons of water that went into putting the fires out.
Perspective.
Yeah. Plus, on top of that, so I built a 4,200 square foot house, and I used X amount of lumber. Well, if the house gets burnt down and I build the same house back, I'm using X amount of lumber. Now, I've just built the same house twice, so I've used twice the lumber in order to have the exact same house.
Yeah.
And so what that encourages is, of course, more deforestation. So everything I would think that the ELF might stand for environmentally, they've just destroyed. They're for cutting down more trees. They're for killing the aquifers and wasting thousands and thousands of gallons of water. Plus, they love the idea of smoking up all the air and everything like that. And it's like, if this is what an environmentalist is, sign me up. I'm an environmentalist too. Look at the truck I drive.
Yeah.
I used water to clean my driveway, by the way. And the horrible thing about it was I was sitting there the whole time going, I wonder how many of my neighbors think I'm a jerk for using water to clean my driveway. I wash my truck, and I'm self-conscious about it. Seriously, what's up with that? I never used to be, because I never used to wash the truck, but now that I wash it.
That's a good thing, Sky. That's progress.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that I'm washing my truck?
No, that you're thinking about the water.
No, see, that's...
I'd be interested. I'm interested to see if the ELF or whoever is responsible releases a statement.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see what they say.
Yeah, and you know, and that's what I was sort of curious about is because
it's just speculation that they did it, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, somebody else could have done it and trying to blame the ELF. But, you know, the message by saying built green, nope, black. You know, it's like, well, I guess they could argue that there could be more green things that they could have done to the house, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's still a weird argument.
But, you know, from what it sounds like, they definitely did several things that were green-related. And, you know, that sort of makes me think about this new res hall that they're going to build up by McEachern and the Gray 2 parking lot.
Really?
I don't know if you heard about that.
No, I haven't heard about that at all.
Yeah, the plans are the Gray 2 parking lot that's essentially east of McEachern, you know where that's at? It's sort of between the Vet building and McEachern.
Right, yeah. Yep.
They're going to flatten the parking lot. They're going to get rid of the parking lot and build a new residence hall right there.
Get rid of more parking?
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to turn some of the blue parking lot into gray parking to offset that. So they're going to – but, you know, if you've ever gone to that blue parking lot, there is a fair amount of empty spaces in there all the time. That big blue lot, yeah.
Okay.
It's a – it it's a huge parking lot, and for the number of people around there that are parking in it, there's still a lot of spots.
So this new hall is going to be a green hall?
Oh, totally. That's
really?
Yeah, and that's the thing that
that's
I'm really,
really cool.
Curious. No, it's not.
What's wrong with that, Scotty? What do you have against green building?
I have against green building is the fact that it's an unproven technology. And I can tell you, in 20 years from now, we're going to be putting three times the amount of money spent to build the hall in order to maintain all the things that are in there
really?
And to retrofit things that were put in there that were good ideas at the time.
What kind of things are they considering right now?
I'm not 100% sure of everything. I'm speculating.
Well, have you heard anything about what they're going to try to do? Or
I haven't I haven't seen the plans as of yet. It's there's a TV show where they're doing like capital improvement stuff around the university, and they're showing a lot of the areas, and that was one of them. And I sort of got into it just before they did the res hall thing, and they talked about it real briefly, but they didn't really go deep in the plans. It was sort of
an overview
of everything. And so they want to build that residence hall. And one person believes that by them building that residence hall, one of the reasons why they're building that one there and making it a large hall is because they want to start shutting down some of the Hill halls. Some of the places like around where you live, like maybe Dunkin' Dunn or McCroskey or
Dunkin' Wilbur Dunn James. Is a pretty horrible place. pretty bad. McCroskey's not too bad. Yeah. And the Honors, I mean, they've redone a lot.
Well, Stimson was within inches of a wrecking ball.
It was
back in like the late 80s. I mean, it was ready to be torn down, and a lot of the Stimson alum people who'd live there. Right.
It's been around for a long time.
Yeah, it's one of the oldest ones on campus.
Right.
And they fought the school and said, no, you've got to keep this one. And the school finally decided to put the money into renovating it. And it's still here today, and most people would be thankful for it because it's such a neat building. If you go into Stimson and look at some of the photos of behind essentially the side that faces Waller – that was pretty much the same. But if you go to the opposite side, former hall, and none of that stuff was there, and it was just a grass field.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. Actually, I went there a couple of years ago and checked out the pictures.
Crazy. So anyway, what they're thinking though, one person speculating that this is going to allow them to take away some of the Hill halls and maybe reuse that land, maybe tear those down and build an academic building, or maybe tear it down for parking. I'm not sure what the ultimate goal would be or why they would necessarily be doing it. Realistically, if they do anything, what they need to do is they need to start by tearing down Stripe Parham and Scott Coleman and Regents, which are just horribly, hideously ugly buildings.
Yeah,
seriously, look around campus. Anything built from about the mid-60s through the 70s are horrible buildings.
Look around the country and you find the same thing. But
it is. And it was the mentality of the time that people were building then.
Yeah.
And I think and that's why that's part of where I'm basing these green arguments from. I really think that in 25 years from now, we're going to look back and we're going to go, what idiots. This is a horrible building. It's a horrible idea. We're going to have to – Krugel McAllister. My understanding is – that one of their longer term Krugel McAllister hasn't been used as a residence hall for years and years and years.
I don't even know where that is.
It's the one that's just below Gannon Goldsworthy.
Oh, is it? Okay, right, yeah.
The white, sort of a white collar.
Yeah,
one.
Don't they have like offices in there?
They do. They have offices in there, and they've housed people from time to time.
Yeah.
But I've heard, and I'm not 100% sure about this, but it seemed to me that's been on the leveling list for a long time. They've been talking about tearing that down.
They really
forever.
Should, yeah. yeah, it's pretty – and it's like a 60s motel.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% sure, but for some reason it seemed to me that Gannon Golds might have been on the list too.
That also looks like a 60s motel.
Yeah, both of those. And that's like I said, all the buildings that were built in that era just seem to be horrible, horrible buildings.
They really
are. And I think that in order to try to be as green as possible, you're going to put in a lot of unproven technology that's going to cost people in the long run. And they're going to find that right after it opens up, they're going to have all these problems or things aren't going to work the way they're hoping. I just have a feeling.
You're very pessimistic, Scotty.
Oh, no, I'm not pessimistic.
Yeah.
Build with the standards that you know work. You're going to have the thing is that you build a good building, a good building with solid foundation, with solid technology, you're going to have a building that's going to last you 100 plus years. You're going to have a building that could be like a Stimson or something like that that's going to be around for a long time to come, that's going to look really nice, that people are going to want to be in. Or you could build a piece of crud and have a Gannon Goldsworthy that needs to be torn down in 30 years.
I think it's a false dichotomy, Scott.
Or a Rogers Orton, another building that was just, they're horrible.
Yeah, but
Those ones need to come down too.
I think you're constructing a false dichotomy here, Scotty. I think you can have green technology in buildings that look nice. There's no laws in the.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not saying that a green building is not going to look nice.
Are you sure? That's what it seems like.
I'm saying the technology used in the building is going to cause that building to have a shorter lifespan, and you're going to have a lot of problems with it. I just don't believe that you can build an honest-to-goodness green building that's going to house students for any length of time.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, I mean, what kind of buildings have you seen, you know, in other universities that have been built green and haven't held up?
Well, it's not been 20 years, 25 years.
Well, I mean, like, how do you...
I'm just saying, just give the technology that we have today 25 years. What you're going to find in order to retrofit the stuff that they have and in order to fix the things that won't work out of the gate, we're going to be spending three times the building cost upgrading, maintaining, and renovating the building. Because in 20 years from now, they're going to go, you know what? The way we're doing our water system, the way we're doing our lighting, the way we're doing this and that isn't working. Put in fluorescent lights. They work. They've been proven.
I'm sure that. I mean, that's probably on. Is that what they're going to do?
I'm sure what they'll probably do is they'll probably have open hallways with natural lighting and natural snow and natural hot weather and natural rodents. I don't know. I'm speculating on stuff, but I honestly believe I'm making a statement now that we will see. We're going to have a heck of a time with maintaining that building.
What would you think about this? I mean, like, I would, it's a research university, right?
Sure.
This is a research university. What would you think about, you know, maybe having this building be kind of some kind of model or a test run, you know, for people could study it and see how it works.
I would prefer some other university do a test run of some green stuff and let us just build a good, solid building.
Yeah, how are we going to be leaders in the field if you don't?
Why do we need to be leaders in the green field?
Well, it's kind of a developing field.
That's Al Gore's area.
Right.
We don't need to emulate all of Al Gore's.
Is that the Fred Thompson and you talking? You see his editorial in the New York Times?
I did not. Tell me about it.
I didn't read it.
Well, that was a great... thanks for having a point to that.
That's why I asked if you had seen it. you can't expect me to read all your Republican editorials.
Let me point out. See the lights above you?
Yeah.
Did you notice that there's only one of the... There's a total of nine possible...
I'm telling you, Scotty, you're making progress towards being green. Pretty soon you'll be voting for Nader.
Oh, yeah, whatever. No, the reason why there's only three on instead of nine is because I'm just not a fan of bright lights. I'd actually have them all off if I could, but I know other people would complain and whine.
Yeah, really.
But anyway,
Is that a reference about me? Because I would be fine with the no lights.
Well, whatever.
No, I'm serious.
Dude, you walked in here and you immediately turned on the lights going, dude, it's too dark in here. I can't see anything.
That is a bold-faced lie. I didn't know such thing.
That's the way I remember it happening. Are you calling me a liar?
Yes, I am, because that definitely didn't happen.
I think the words were bold-faced liar, I think, are the specific words that Tom used to describe my point of view on the lighting situation. But, no, I just believe that I don't think – I mean, obviously – I've never been one to waste just for the sake of wasting. You know, I've used.
Me neither.
But it's not about being green. It's not about being green. I don't do it because, I'm trying to feel better about myself and I'm trying to save the world and I'm trying to be green. I do it because that's just the way, you know, it just makes sense. For instance.
Yeah, it makes economic sense.
You're shaving and you don't use an electric razor. Well, you probably shave once a semester.
Right. Actually, every day. And no, I don't use an electric razor.
Okay. I was kidding about that once a semester thing. But anyway. But between each time of rinsing off your blade, do you turn off the water, turn it on, rinse it, turn it off again, and shave some more?
Yep.
You know, and that's what I do as well. I mean, you could leave the water running the whole time. Or, for instance, when you brush your teeth, same kind of thing. Once you've wet your toothbrush down, you turn off the water until you're totally done, ready to rinse out the mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember vividly Sesame Street instructing me to do that. So I, of course.
And you, of course, watched the Sesame Street of the 90s. So
late 80s, early 90s.
You were born in 87?
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
So early 90s, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a much more green time.
Right. I mean, it wasn't that great. Oscar DeGrasse was still in his trash can, not the recycle bin, and that kind of thing.
But pop cans, for instance. When I'm done drinking pop, I don't throw away the cans typically. I crush them down and I put them in recycle. Yeah, and I've been doing that. I've been doing that. I've been doing the recycle thing ever since I was about 8.
Yeah.
And
good for you.
It wasn't about saving the earth. It wasn't about reducing the landfills. Because I think that us throwing away stuff, we're actually helping the economy by throwing away stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the same with buying.
We're making our economy stronger in the future. It's not our economy today, but it's our future economy that's going to be saved by us throwing stuff away. And I'll explain that in a second. But what I found
is... You mean by recycling things, not by us throwing stuff away?
No, by us throwing stuff away, we're saving and helping ourselves. We're saving our future by throwing stuff away. And like I said, I'll explain that in a minute.
Okay, I'm waiting with bated breath.
Thank you.
For this explanation.
And the reason why I recycled from the time I was a little kid is because I could make money out of it.
Yeah. Did you do the 5 cent thing?
I took pop cans? No. I mean, it was just, there's a local recycle place and they paid you by the pound.
Nice.
And so I went out one day, it was me and my friends, we went out cleaning up our streets, not because we were cleaning up our streets, we weren't picking up the other trash, we were picking up all the pop cans and all the beer bottles and everything that had been thrown in the ditches and everywhere. And we pretty much went for, you know, 7-8 year old kids, you know, we covered about a 4 block up and about a 4 block wide radius of all the streets in my neighborhood. And we collected all this stuff and we took it down to the recycle place. They gave us a total of $6
nice.
For at the time was pretty good for 7-8 year old kids.
Absolutely.
And then my friend's dad, who took the cans in, he actually threw $1 in for each of us. So we each got $3 because, you know, he figured, you know, all the hard work we'd done. So, you know, we each got $3 out of the deal. Nice. And that started my way of like, oh, wow, these pop cans are worth money. I'll just set them aside and take them in. You know, it's little things like that that the way I see it is you do that because it just makes sense. And
economic incentives are very powerful.
I mean, economic, but even just the whole idea. It's like, what's the point of leaving the water on the whole time when you don't need it? You know, I didn't stop doing it because one day I'm like, oh, wow, it'd be so green of me to turn off the water between each time I shaved.
You know,
or it's so green of me to turn off two of the four.
Not all people that are, you know, trying to help the environment are these kind of self-absorbed assholes. I'm not sure where you're getting this concept from, Scotty. You seem to think that people are doing it for themselves as opposed to for other people. I mean, it doesn't seem is that a mischaracterization of your characterization of green people? Because it seems like what you're saying is that green people that are trying to be green think about, you know, this kind of a smug attitude to have.
Well, they are smug. They're usually vegetarians who are totally looking down upon meat eaters. It's like,
I'm not a vegetarian, Scotty.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
I've never once seen you eat meat, ever.
You've never seen me eat anything.
Exactly. You don't, you're like, I'm not going to hurt the poor vegetables.
I've never seen you eat meat either. So as far as I know, you're a vegetarian.
All right, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
Take my word for it.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, here's how we're saving our economy by throwing stuff away today.
Okay.
Where does the stuff go?
Well, some of it goes on garbage barges that get dumped in the ocean, and most of it goes in the landfill. And gets buried.
Okay, and then what?
Then it either decomposes or sits there.
Sits there. But guess what? How did we get the metal to begin with?
We got it out of the ground.
By mining it. So if we have thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of pop cans that are buried in our landfills, what's going to happen in, say, 50 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
Think about some entrepreneur coming up there going, you know what? There is gold, so to speak, in them hills.
Yeah.
They're going to go down there. Think about all the things that they can go down and start digging through and recycling out of there. All the pop cans and the other kinds of metals that they're going to find there. Maybe they'll find a good way of doing stuff with some of the plastics that are in there and everything mm-hmm. else. And essentially, you'll have this humongous field of plastic and metal gold.
So you're very optimistic about technology in this sense, but when it comes to green building, you're the opposite. I can't figure it out, Scotty. You're all over the map on this one.
The difference is that this is the economy. This is people.
Right.
No, this is the people saying, hey, there is value. And the reason why I'm saying 50 years from now is because right now it's still more economical not to recycle a lot of things. It costs more energy to recycle stuff.
It does,
And 50 years from now, will that be the case? I don't think so. And at that time, it will probably be more economical for them to go through landfills because they'll serve two purposes.
Yeah.
They'll serve two purposes. And 50 years from now, they'll be cleaning up a landfill by condensing the amount of stuff that's there by getting rid of half of it by recycling it. And somebody's going to see a huge amount of money by doing it. So you got that aspect. And that's the future economic aspect that they're going to say, hey, this is going to help us out. Now, the thing about the green building is that in 25 years from now, the building's going to be 25 years old. The building doesn't get better over time. It degrades over time.
Right.
And the technology,
I'm familiar with that concept.
And the bottom line is that I just don't believe that the technology is here today that will be good in 25 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm not an expert on the issue. That's just my
gut feeling. I could be 100% wrong. And somebody could come in here and say, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, these are going to be very strong buildings that will last forever. But I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. I really hope that in 25 years after that building's open, that I'll still be in Pullman, because I really would love to see what they're going to have to do to maintain some of the green systems they put in. And how many of the green systems within 5 years of them starting that building that they're just going to say, this did not even work, we're throwing it away, but
let's try something new. You know, that's how we make progress.
You don't try something new on a huge building that costs millions of dollars.
Well,
you do what's proven. Mm-hmm. And in a time of tight budgets, maybe that's part of the problem, is they have too much money and they don't know what to do with it. What? If they're able to build a building and spend money.
It seems unlikely, but
Well,
I don't. Can you ever have? I mean, can a university ever have too much money?
Yes.
You think so?
As a matter of fact, this is interesting. And if I were, I can't take this and say it's my own idea, but
yeah.
I'm going to try to the best I can portray somebody else's idea.
Okay.
And what his idea was is that student loans need to be harder to get.
Really?
And most students are going to go, what are you talking about, you big jerk? They're hard enough.
I'll wait for this explanation.
But where his argument came in is that student loans are so easy to get and so many people get them that universities don't even worry about trying to keep their costs down. They don't worry about it because there's no incentive for them. They're not having a problem getting students. They're not having a problem with students getting money. Students always get the money they pay to the university. So the problem is that you make student loans harder to get, students have to fight harder for them, and then the universities are going to go, well, we're having such a hard time getting students, or the students that we have are having such a hard time paying things. We've got to find ways of keeping our costs down. And the point that he was making, he's like this financial guy that comes on, like, depending on the radio station I'm on, when I turn on my truck, he'll be on. The Ed Howard Show, there it is.
Okay.
Anyway, what he was talking about was, and like I said, I can't display it as well as he can, but he talked about education costs, or call it tuition costs, are outpacing inflation costs.
Just like medical costs, yeah.
And so what's happening is that there's no incentive on the university to find ways to keep costs down.
Just like the medical companies. Weird how that works, huh?
Funny how that works.
Yeah.
So one of his arguments was a way that you can do that is by making loans harder to get. And by making loans harder to get, it will force the universities to slow down a little bit and take a look at what they're doing. Because right now, it's like, well, if we up tuition by 17%, students will just have to get a bigger loan. But no problem, they're getting loans left and right.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, at WSU, as students, let's see here, rec center fees, Pullman transit fees.
Yeah. You don't tell me about
fees,
that. Yeah, I don't.
Stadium fees, an additional possible Pullman transit fee. I mean,
tell me about that, Scotty. Yeah.
And about the last, let's see here. I think the rec center went in late 90s, and the fee started right around then. So let's say 10 years. In the last 10 years, there's been at least 5 fees added on voluntarily by students, ranging from in the 30s to hundreds of dollars a semester.
Yeah.
It just, you know, and it's funny because – you know, it's always just a small amount. Oh, it's only $30 a semester per student. That's not a big deal. It's only $100 a semester, and look at this beautiful rec center you get. Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of students love that rec center. A lot of students go and use the rec center.
Yeah. I've been there like twice.
And, and for most people, it's probably – realistically, for $125 a semester, essentially $250 a year, I'd love to see you get – a private membership to a club that has the amenities that has.
That's true.
You really, as a student, really are making it.
Yeah.
But the
it was optional. I think if it was optional.
Rec Center?
Yeah. I would prefer if it was optional, but you know, that's wishful thinking.
And maybe what they could do in the future, once all the everything's paid off on that, you know, obviously they're still going to have the maintenance and upkeep costs and whatnot.
Yeah.
But what would be nice is if they did either lower the amount.
Yeah.
Because they're not paying anything off. They're just doing maintenance.
Are they paying stuff off right now? Is that what the money's for?
I think so. I believe they had a – I believe that that was part of it.
Because
I can't imagine –
big construction loan or something.
Right. Because it used to be 100. I think it's, what, 125 or 150 now? Yeah. And I'm not 100% sure. Is it 125 or 150? Do you know?
I actually thought it was either 90 or 75. I don't know why. Maybe that's a little low, but
– that's probably for a sports pass. But, no, I'm, you know, and I guess I could always look this up, or if you know, you could call 335-2207 and enlighten me. But anyway, I believe it's 125 to 150 a month, because it was 100 and then they upped it.
You know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of the summer fee.
Actually. Oh, okay, the summer fee. There you go.
Must be lower than the semester fee.
Yeah, it is, because it's a shorter period of time.
Right.
But, so anyway, it's you know, there's all this money that's going in, and I can't imagine that they had to raise the fee $25 per student. You know, at, say, 16,000 students, it's $4,000 or $40,000. Is that $40,000? $25 times 16,000. So you got 4,000 times 25, 100,000. I don't know.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I feel dumb that I can't do that calculation right now, but now I'm self-conscious about it, so it'll take even longer than normal. But anyway, the point is they're taking in all this extra money every semester to help cover costs and fees and this and that and everything else. I would think that once the construction portion is done, they're not going to need that much money to maintain the building. You know, I mean, you're going to have a certain amount of money.
Sure. Staff. I mean, they have a lot of staff members working there.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. They got to buy towels, for instance. I always see that towel sign. Yeah.
Yeah, or the gum.
I haven't seen that one.
On the way in, it's on the right-hand side. There's a sign that says, you know, cost of removing gums, X number of dollars a semester, a year, whatever. And then, of course, the ones with the towels and stuff. But, I mean, it's true, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
when
people are taking all that kind of stuff or, you know, spitting out their gum in the middle of using it.
I could actually use some more towels. I mean, I should look into that.
So, you know, and then the bookie. I think the bookie was probably the worst one that the students did. I mean, Pullman Transit, I think, is used by a lot of people. And granted, there's a lot that don't use it, and they're subsidizing it for those that do.
Yeah.
But Pullman Transit probably wasn't bad. The rec center, I think, was a very good idea overall because it gave students a good place to go work out. The older places on campus that we had were fractions of the size that was.
Right, yeah.
And it was spread out. If you wanted to play basketball, you're here. If you wanted to play, if you wanted to lift weights, you're over at the field house
facility,
annex.
Yeah.
If you wanted to go do this, you're over here. You know, and it's now all in one place.
Yeah.
So it's really nice in that aspect. So I think overall that was great for the students. Plus now there's, you know, the parking out there is pretty good as well.
Yep.
On and on. So that wasn't bad. The stadium fee, yeah, you could argue one way or the other.
I'm not a fan of that at all.
Do you go to Cougar games?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not
see,
really.
See, that's the thing. I sort of had the impression about you.
Yeah. I'm just not very school-spirited, Scott. I'm not going to lie to you.
No, it was just one of those things where I think that fee put onto the students, I'm really torn about that one. I still think it's, in some ways, I guess what it is like, I'd really love to see exactly what it looks like at other places, but my understanding is with most of the other Pac-10 schools, students don't get the prime front row seats. You know, like, you go to the basketball games.
Yeah.
We get the whole entire half of Beasley. You go to football games. We get the best seats right behind the Cougs in the house, plus half the stadium, or, you know, a good third of the stadium or whatever.
Oh.
You go to the different sporting events. There's so many seats set aside for students.
Yeah.
Whereas you go to some of these other places, and it's like those are prime seating. They can get big money by giving them to the rich people and then putting the students to the sides.
The thing about WCU is that we are hours and hours away from major metropolitan centers. So I'm not sure who they think is going to sit and buy tickets for these seats. We haven't had that many sellout games. I know Cougar basketball is doing pretty well, or we were anyway. And, you know, Cougar football, you know, we've had some good years. But have we really had any years where every single seat has been taken? You know, it seems like It seems weird. Where do they think these people are going to come from? Are they going to be flying over from Seattle just because there's extra seats now? Sure. I mean, I agree
that that's, you know, part of me is like, yeah, the expansion of the stadium, because right now the Whitman County has like about 42,000 people, and we're going to have a stadium that seats almost the whole entire county.
Yeah, like other Pac-10 schools are located in, like, you know, San Francisco, or they're located in L.A., or they're in Seattle. It's like, those are, I can understand them having bigger stadiums.
Right, and it would be interesting, because you got WSU Vancouver is coming on big and strong as being, you know, a bigger and bigger school. I'm wondering one of these days if WSU Vancouver will take over as being the flagship, and then they get all this Cougar sports, because think about the kind of arguments you could make. How about this? For the people who live in Seattle, it's a much closer place. It's right, and it's a major freeway the whole way there.
Yeah.
It makes it an easier day trip, and you got a much more urban area to draw fans from.
Well, maybe someday. I think your prediction.
I don't ever want to see it be the case.
No, I don't think they'll ever move away from the main campus, but I think they'll probably maybe play, like, you know how they usually at least one game in Seattle.
Yeah, maybe we'll
do one
in Vancouver.
It seems like maybe they play one in Vancouver. Yeah. I mean, the Portland area is pretty big. I don't know where they'd play it in Portland. I'm not really familiar if they have any big stadiums or anything, but I would be willing to bet money on that, actually.
Yeah. All right, there you go. All righty. We got the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM. Listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. You got Scotty in. KZUU is made possible in part by Heroes in Sports. Heroes in Sports is located at 245 Northeast Kamiakan Street in Pullman. It's Pullman's hometown deli and offers a variety of sandwiches, soups, and salads, with catering also available. More information can be found by calling them at Heroes in Sports, 509-334-5423. Need legal counseling? WSU Student Legal Services is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need help, stop by their office in Annex Room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, and Friday, 9 to 1. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to contact KZUU at 335-2208 or email gm@kzuu.org. Chemistry is everywhere. It is in the water we drink, the shoes we wear, and the food that we eat. If you're interested in chemistry, come join the Chemistry Club every second and third Tuesday in former room 315 at 5:30 p.m. and partake in the various chemistry demonstrations throughout the year. For more information, contact Sean Richardson at 509-8545-5196. And now for the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. The favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. I wish I knew the name of that song. I guess I could pull out the DVD and actually take a look to see what the name of it is, because that has to be one of my favorite of the PESs. The favorites. It's A Dark Day. There we go. Now you know. It's A Dark Day. Good song. Sort of a nice laid-back, relaxing one. It's always good to get that in there between the hours of the show. Allow you to relax a little bit. Let your blood pressure reduce a little bit from my horrible, evil, right-wing conservative talk. So, on Palusitix, there was recently post about a email talking about, I believe it's either House, it's a Senate bill, or it was a House bill that was being put through by the area Democrats. Golly gee willikers, there we go, it's a Senate bill. So Senate Bill 6900. And it was funny, because when I got the email, I was like, ah, this has to be a joke. You know, you always get those spam emails, and you're just like, oh, come on. So I got it, and I took a look at it. And essentially what it is a group of Democrats, mainly from the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County and one from Vancouver, that, let's see, it was Rodney Tom from the Bellevue-Redmond area, Jan Cole Wells from the Seattle area, Craig Pride Moore from the Vancouver area, and Karen Kaiser from the Kent SeaTac area, and Adam Klein from the Seattle area. They all sponsored a bill that would add a fee onto everybody's licensing. And see, some years back, we had an initiative on the ballot that said, hey, you know what, we're sick and tired of paying exorbitant costs to license the vehicles that we drive. Used to cost, the amount of money was based on the value of the vehicle. So you buy a brand new car, you're probably paying $600-$700 every year to license it. And of course, that's a ton of money when you compare it to what we pay today. So an initiative went through, and it caused all these all the fees to be $30. So part of the argument was, it's like, oh gosh, if you put this through, there's going to be hundreds and hundreds of dollars that are going to be reduced, and services are going to have to be reduced because so many of the cities around the state used this money in order to pay for fire and police services and roads and on and on and on. Well, so there's a lot of doom and gloom over this. And then other people argued, well, you know, there's also a lot of people who license their vehicles outside of the state of Washington because of the extreme exorbitant costs. So you have all these people who live on the borders like Spokane and the Pullman area that are probably licensing in Idaho. And you have all the Vancouver and the Tri-City residents who are probably licensing out of Oregon in order to bypass this tax. So if you figure all those people who are doing that will start paying $30 now, that will help recoup some of the loss. But I would have a hard time seeing a $30 recoup being able to cover a $450 loss. I mean, that math just does not add up. But anyway, it was passed, and there was a lot of belt tightening by a lot of cities. And over the years, they've been trying to add fees back in, a little bit here and a little bit there, or add taxes back in, and on and on and on. So being that they don't understand what the word no means, these Democrats over on the West Side decides that what they want to do is they want to add hundreds of dollars a year to pretty much everybody's license fees. And that what they would do is they would base it on the size of the engine in the vehicle. So for a 1980 Toyota 4x4, which is what I own, I would be paying $100 a year extra just because it has a certain size engine. And I'm not quite sure exactly how small your engine would need to be, but I think about two gerbils would be about the biggest engine you could have where you didn't have to pay extra money. After that, you know, you're paying more money. So it'd be $100 a year every year because I have a 1980 Toyota. And then for my truck, my other truck, I'd be paying $360 every year extra. So I'd be paying a $460 a year more for my two vehicles if this went through. And this was just and this fee, which we all in the state of Washington, as a majority of us, voted down years ago, would be put back upon us. So these Democrats just don't understand the word no. We said no, we don't want to put this, we don't want to pay this fee. We don't want to have to pay the fee. So the Democrats are like, oh, I don't think they meant no. I think they just meant no. And no means yes in my book, right? So they try to pass this through. And then what would happen in the year 2012, the fee would go away as far as engine size. They would then base it on your CO2 emissions. And depending on what your CO2 emissions are, that would base your fee. And I was trying to figure out online where I could go to find out what the CO2 emissions were for the different kinds of vehicles just to get an idea. But I wasn't able to find anything like that. KZUU, you're on the air.
I guess he didn't want to talk. So in 2012, CO2 emissions would be replaced, or that the vehicle engine size fee would be replaced with CO2 emission fee. Like I said, I couldn't find anything online to tell me exactly where what a different kind of engine would put out for CO2 fees or whatever. But let's see if he wants to talk this time. KZUU, you're on the air. Nope. Okay. Obviously, whoever it is wants to talk to me, but not on the air. But I'm not going to be able to stop on the show to talk to him. So anyway. So the CO2 emission fees, like I said, I can't find them online anywhere. And it would be nice to know what my Toyota puts out in CO2 emissions compared to my Dodge. And then the Dodge has a much larger engine than the Toyota does. And it would make sense that the Toyota puts out less because it's a smaller engine. But then again, the engine is using technology that is 26 years older. So one would think that maybe the older technology is going to spit out more CO2 emissions. I'm not quite sure. And that's why I wanted to look this up, so I was a little bit more prepared for knowing what the CO2 emissions are. But I almost wonder if it is true that an older engine puts out more CO2, if that would be another way of penalizing people who have older vehicles in order to try to get them into newer, more economical vehicles. And the thing is that with the cost of vehicles today, sometimes the older ones are all you can really afford to have. And when it's paid off, you know, you don't want to be getting yourself in $20,000 to $30,000 in debt over a vehicle. So I'm not sure about the CO2 emission fee, or maybe the CO2 emission fee was specifically based in order to get people out of the bigger engines. Maybe it is by engine size and not necessarily age. And if you did that, your CO2 emission fee might cause people to try to drive smaller vehicles. So, you know, first off, the person from Vancouver that was supporting it, I found it sort of strange because they had to have known about all the people who were registering their vehicle outside of Washington that lived in the Vancouver area. But this person was still for it anyway. But once again, they did not listen to the voters. If they'd listened to the voters to begin with, they would have never even put this. They would have never even put this before the Transportation Committee or anything like that. Because it's like, hey, the voters of Washington don't want it. Why are we even bringing it up? But once again, maybe they thought they could sneak it through. So they said the money, and in the bill, it said that the money is supposed to go to quote unquote transportation purposes only, but they never clarified what is a transportation purpose. And because of that, I was thinking to myself, well, let's see here. If any of the previous measures that they had tried to put through the voters, usually half, if not more, of the money, I believe Prop 1 in the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County would have been about $10.2 billion towards the $10.2 billion towards mass transit and only $8 billion towards roadway. KZU, you're on the air. Hello. No, still doesn't want to talk to me. I guess, you know, I think after about four or five times, they might learn that I'm not going to answer the phone. Anyway. So, typically, transportation means in a lot of people's minds, especially if you're a Democrat, mass transit, and by all means, that's the saving grace of the world is mass transit, and they'll do everything they can in order to push it through. And maybe this was one of their ways of getting more money for mass transit. So if you were to take half of the money and put it towards mass transit and half the money and put it towards roads and everything like that, sure, maybe you're going to make – or excuse me. And the problem is they don't even say for roads. They say for transportation. What in the world does that even mean? What is transportation? I mean, does that mean that they're going to buy everybody a Segway scooters for those who live in Seattle so they can get from point A to point B? So anyway, of course, this is just not a good idea to begin with. I think that it was an ill-conceived idea. It was a bunch of Democrats not listening to the voting base, which is really funny because Washington is such a blue state, and there's so many left-wing, environmental, green-type people in this area, and very, very left-leaning. And it's interesting that we voted for things such as, you know, the reduced taxes on our vehicles. So, you know, maybe they figured, well, because we're putting this on engine size, it's going to encourage people to have smaller cars. Therefore, all these left-leaning people that voted for this lower fees wouldn't be having a hard time with this, but those who live in the rural areas have such farming and other agricultural areas. You have so many people that drive trucks because they need them for work purposes, and all these people would be the ones being hit hard on these extra fees, and all the people who are living in the Seattle area that drive their little Hyundais or their other little cars that have really tiny engines wouldn't be hit at all. So, of course, it's not going to affect them. It's going to affect, really, the people who are living in the more rural areas. Once again, it's you know, the people in the big urban areas that just don't necessarily understand that there is a need for these big vehicles. So, anyway, one of the posters on Palooza-Tix.com had mentioned that about 2 weeks ago now, the bill has totally died. And there's a news article talking about how the people who were involved in writing this have essentially it was the people were emailing and talking to their representatives so fervently that the public input has pretty much killed the bill. Which is interesting, because if these representatives had any kind of pulse on the people they represent, this bill probably would have never even seen the light of day. People wouldn't even waste their time on writing it. I think it just really goes to show that they don't listen to us. They're going to try to slip money and other economic issues past us, and we have to be constantly vigilant on our elected officials. And that seems so backwards, because if I'm electing somebody, I'm trusting that they're going to go and represent the needs and the wants and the desires of the area. And I don't think the wants and the desires of the area are to increase taxes based on the size of the vehicle I have. As it is, with the cost of gas, I think that is enough of an incentive for some people to get out of the bigger vehicles if they don't need them. I personally, when you heard earlier, Tom suggested that I get a smaller car. He has the Ford Explorer. He had mentioned to me the Ford Escape, and I pretty much quickly said, no, that's a coffin on wheels. And he said, oh, does it have a bad safety rating? I was like, I don't know about the safety rating. It's just a small vehicle. And I have no interest in getting myself in a really tiny vehicle. I don't want to be in a car accident and have a small vehicle. I have a lot of stuff. You know, and like I said earlier, it's not necessarily the size of the vehicle in the car accident. But I'll tell you what. I've seen enough car accidents where it's all about physics. And what it says is those cars with the bigger lug nut or with more lug nuts tend to do better in the car accidents than the ones that are smaller cars. I mean, yeah, it's all fine and dandy when you run head on into one of those brick walls and it shows your, or you do a offset head on crash or something like that, or certain things like that. And yeah, it shows your vehicle has some good safety areas, but where the problem lies is that's not always how the car accidents is going to happen. And that's not necessarily how everything's going to happen. When you hit a semi-truck, what they need to do is they need to do the exact same test, but instead have it go head-on versus a semi-truck and have the semi-truck sit higher than your vehicle so you don't actually get stopped by the vehicle. It actually just drives over the top of you, or it drives over a portion of your car. And nothing about your passenger crumple zones is really going to save you when you have a thousands and thousands of pounds vehicle driving over the top of you. It has everything to do with you having a bigger vehicle too. Anyway, I'm just a big fan of having the big car. I believe that that by driving the bigger vehicle, though I am going to spend more money in gas, even if it has lesser safety ratings, I still feel better in the vehicle because I feel that there's more metal around me. I feel that I'm higher up off the roadway. So I'm not going to be, if I'm hit by another vehicle of equal size, I'm going to have a better chance than being in a tiny vehicle that, you know, when I come up to it, I'm looking at their bumper straight through my windshield versus looking through them through their windshield. You know, it's just a huge difference there. Anyway, let us hear this fun little PSA.
Hey, Doc, over here. Remember me?
Not now, triglyceride. I'm trying to get everybody to remember you. I'm Dr. Donica Moore. We all know about good and bad cholesterol. But how much do you know about your triglyceride level?
150. Tell them to keep me under 150.
She's right. Experts say normal triglycerides are below 150. Elevated triglyceride levels can increase your risk of heart disease. And if you're a woman, that risk goes up even more.
Don't risk it, people. Heart disease is not pretty.
As you may have guessed, the forgotten fat, triglyceride, is ready to share the attention with good and bad cholesterol.
Good this, bad that, nah, nah, nah.
For your sake and mine, always remember to ask about the good, the bad, and the forgotten fat, triglycerides.
Hey, Doc, did they get that 150 message?
Sorry about that. That was sort of an abrupt ending. I think our CD just sort of died on me here. Alrighty. I sort of was alluding to something earlier on the show when I had Tom here. And what I asked him was, should students have the right to defend themselves by any means, any legal means? Now, I didn't say any means necessary because that could be interpreted in a lot of ways. And I don't want to see a student running around with a bomb strapped to them saying, if you try to hurt me, I'm going to kill you and everybody around you. And it's going to be, you know, sort of one of those mutual assured destruction situations where, I might die, but I'm going to take you with me type of situations. I'm talking about by legal means. I'm talking about legal means, whatever that is, whether that's carrying pepper spray, if that's okay, or whether that's having the ability to have any other kind of legal weapons or other legal things that you could do. It's interesting. He immediately went to the idea of guns on campus. Is that a bad thing? Is it dangerous to have guns on campus? And I believe that just like anything at all could be used inappropriately. And to not allow something because the possibility that somebody's going to use it inappropriately, I believe, is an un-American concept. Though that seems to be where America heads anymore. Well, this person might misuse it, so therefore we got to ban it and make it illegal. We were talking about lawn darts the other day and how you can't find lawn darts anymore because there's these essentially big, huge projectiles that are being thrown through the air and are going places that weren't intended and hitting people and sticking in them and stuff like that. And so you have lawn darts that are pretty much, you know, not allowed anymore. And it's just rather than living life and you know, stuff happens, it's like, well, we got to save everybody from the possibility of one thing hurting them. And I think that most of the arguments that are being made that are saying we shouldn't allow guns on campus are along the concept that, by having more guns, you have a bigger chance of somebody getting hurt by a gun. And that obviously if a student's carrying a gun, they're going to be very irresponsible with it and they're just going to start randomly shooting people up on accident or on purpose, and that by, you know, allowing the guns, you're just allowing the situation to be worsened. And, you know, I guess it would have been interesting. Let's say you did have that auditorium where somebody shows up with some sort of gun or something like that, and they decide they're going to try to take a whole bunch of people out before killing themselves because for whatever reason that's going to give them some notoriety. And I don't know, you know, what's going on in their sick head that makes them think that it's okay to take out other people before you kill yourself. But, well, let's say they did that and they come into an auditorium full of people like that. Well, what if all of a sudden five of those people sees the guy with the gun, five of them stand up and start firing away? You're probably going to have one dead person. Who knows? Maybe you'll have more than one. I don't know. Maybe the argument is that, well, if all those people had guns, they'd be randomly shooting all over the place. You know, they'd be shooting in the air. They'd be shooting the people next to them. They'd be shooting the professor. They'd be shooting the overhead. They'd be shooting everything. And it's – I guess the bottom line is, and this is why I asked the question the way I did to Tom, I said, should students be allowed to protect themselves by any legal means? And if your answer is no, they should not be allowed to protect themselves by any legal means, then you are obviously saying, okay, there are certain situations where I'd rather you get hurt or killed rather than having a chance of fighting. And that I don't think is a fair or a justifiable position. I don't think that you can ever tell somebody that it's okay for them to die in order for your feeling of security to be there. Because once again, we talk about security. We talk about what makes things secure. Well, you want to pretend that a campus is a secure place because you're not allowed to have guns. And, you know, all these law-abiding people that are like, oh, no guns on campus. Okay, I'll leave mine at home type of people, they're not the ones that you need to worry about. It's the ones that could care less about that little rule that says no guns on campus. Now, you also might argue, well, the students who have guns, they might not be trained to use them, and they might shoot themselves in the foot, or other horrible things might happen. Yeah, the horrible things might happen, like somebody could show up with a gun and shoot a whole bunch of people. That kind of horrible thing could happen. But once again, I think that students or anybody should have the right to defend themselves by any legal means. So you are looking for a more secure campus. Well, let's talk about another place that is fully secure. And let me ask you if you would like to be in a place like this. Okay, I am going to build a place that is secure. This place is going to make it so nobody has any weapons, no guns, no knives, no batons, no nunchucks, no bombs, no Molotov cocktails, nothing. There are no weapons. Maybe some rocks. They might have some rocks. They might find some of those. But other than that, no weapons. So here I have a place, and this place is going to be isolated from the general population of people because we don't want these unknown people to come into our area without first passing through a security check. And we're going to be making sure the security check goes really well. So sure about it that we're going to actually make them strip off everything so we can make sure there is no weapons on them at all. But once they're inside our little place that we're going to build, we will know that they don't have any weapons because we made it secure. So now here we have this place, and it's secure from outsiders. They're not going to come in and cause us harm with their weapons because we're securing it from the outside. And we're also secure because we know nobody else around us has a weapon. And we're also going to make it a communist-type utopia where we will supply everybody with all the medical necessities they need. We're going to supply everybody with 3 meals a day. They're not going to have to pay for it at all. They will not have to pay a penny for it. Free medical health care, free meals. We're going to make sure that their living area, that nobody is encroaching upon it. We're not going to tear down and hurt the wildlife animals. So it's going to be a very green type community. We're going to care about the forests that are outside of our area. We're not going to tear down any forests. We're not going to harm any animals. We're not going to do any research on animals. We're not going to do any genetic engineering on seeds for food or anything like that. And we're only going to allow certain people in. We're going to be selective with the people that we allow within our area because we don't want to have the bad kind of people there. We only want our kind of people there, only the kind of people who are just like us. So we're going to have this place that is totally secured. There's not going to be any guns. There's not going to be any knives. There's not going to be any drugs. We're not going to allow any drugs at all. No alcohol. It's going to be a clean place. It's going to be a perfect place. People aren't going to have to work unless they want to. And if they want to work, they will do something that will benefit everybody who's there. They will benefit themselves. Everybody is going to be treated equally. So it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be a perfect communist-type environment. Everybody's going to get the exact same kind of living quarters. Everybody's going to get the exact same kind of treatment. Everybody's going to get the exact same amount of food. Everybody's going to get the exact same health care. There's not going to be any kind of hierarchy. Race and class just won't matter one bit because everybody will be 100% equal. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I already have a place like that. It's called prison. But now that I say that, it's nothing like what I just described. There are weapons. So prisons aren't really all that secure, are they? They're supposed to be, but there's weapons inside. There's all sorts of horrible people inside. Would you want to live in a place like a prison where, yeah, you get 3 hots and a cot a day, but you don't have any freedom of choosing which hots and a cot you get. You get assigned them. Is that a kind of place that we want to live? Is that the place that you would like to be, that the feeling of security is there, but the reality isn't. Because I want to live in a real world, not a make-believe world. I argue with people all the time who say, well, communism on paper is perfect. I'm like, it's not perfect. Nothing about communism on paper is perfect. Maybe in a twisted, warped mind is perfect, but the one of the basic foundations of it is that the people are going to want to do stuff to help out everybody else, and that there's not going to be any kind of incentive in it, and that everybody should be perfectly equal, and on and on. It's just not a perfect situation, even on paper. The problem is that people work hard because they want to benefit from their hard work. If I can get the exact same amount of stuff and not have to work a day in my life, do you think I would want to work? Heck no. I'd be out golfing every day. Well, maybe playing softball, but the bottom line is I would be out doing something other than working every single day. Now, granted, I work most of the jobs I work because I enjoy working them, and they're a lot of fun. And the money is all secondary. But the point is, prisons are secure. Prisons are not safe. So by saying something is secure means it's safe is not necessarily – they don't necessarily flow. And here's the problem that I run into. We talk about airline security. We talk about all these places where we're willing to give up all our liberties, all our personal information, all our liberties, all the things that make me me, and that nobody else should be taking from me on for no reason. And we're willingly giving this to people in order for the idea of security. And the problem is that we don't have security. Being secure does not necessarily make you safe. And the problem is the only thing that giving away that liberty does to you is it makes you less anonymous too. And in my argument, it makes you less safe. Excuse me. So I believe that if you take this prison example and you take a deep look at it, I think what you'll find is that we are better off not living in a prison mentality. We are better off not living in a situation where we believe that being more secure equals more safety. Because I doubt you'd find anybody who lives in a prison who believes that they're in a very secure place. Real quickly now, the Reverend Horton Heath. The favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. In today's Daily Evergreen, there's also a letter to the editor about having guns on campus. And in this one, the person is against allowing people to have guns on campus because he feels that there's a greater chance that he'll be shot in the back by one of the people who have a gun versus a shooter who would be coming in there with a gun. Interesting point of view. Now, he might be thinking in one kind of situation. Let's say a person comes into a room and pulls out a gun real quick, shoots a whole bunch of times, runs off. Well, yeah, there's probably not a great chance he's going to get hit, but there's a chance. Now, let's say the shooter goes into a room, barricades himself inside, and you have 30 students, none of them with a means of protecting themselves in any way, shape, or form. Well then, now we have a problem because now we have a captive audience and each and every one person could be shot execution style and not a single person there has a means to protect themselves. Now one of those students has a gun. What's the worst that's going to happen? The shooter might die. Everybody else still might die. It's hard to say, but everybody has a fighting chance. I think that's, you know, you might find this as a disgusting thing, but those people on Flight 93 realized what was happening. By the time the other people were told, just relax, everything will be okay, and then the planes get crashed in the building, people on Flight 93 were told, hey, this is what's happening. And they knew it was going to happen to them too, and they pretty much had a choice. They could sit back and let it happen, or they could fight. And they might not live if they fight, but they're certainly going to die if they don't. You know, it doesn't give you a lot of options. And I can see a shooting situation as being similar. You could sit back and hope for the best and hope that for whatever reason you're spared, or you could fight back. And that's all people are asking for the ability to do. I don't believe that you're going to see a large number of people carrying guns. Actually, as a matter of fact, if people carry guns on campus, I doubt you'll see any of them carrying guns. Chances are they're going to be concealed. I just think that it's a very politicized thing, and it's a very you hear the whole you get the ad hominem, or not ad hominem, but you get the kind of statements like, oh yeah, you're going to have a lot of students walking around packing heat, and you know, just trying to make it sound as bad as it is. But and now on an interesting side note, for shooting somebody, this guy this guy decided he didn't want to go to work. So in order to not go to work, he asked a friend to shoot him in the arm. And by shooting him in the arm, he was hoping to get out of work. So he gets shot in the arm. Then he says, oh, I'm a victim of a drive-by when I was out jogging. So, well, the cops figured it out. They realized what was going on. And not only now is he under arrest for doing a false statement, he has a hole in his arm, well, his shoulder. And he's probably going to get fired from work because one of the things he was trying to do is avoid a drug test. Not a very good situation in any way, shape, or form. So I think that's all we're going to get to today on the PES. We will come back after spring break with another great series of shows. Actually, yeah, it will be after spring break. Spring break's next week. Tom will be gone for the next 2 weeks, he told me. He'll be gone spring break, but because he's an overachiever, he'll have a second week that he'll be off. And I said, well, if you're an overachiever, how come you only ran half a marathon? He didn't have an answer for that because he's not much of an overachiever. Now, is he? No, I'm kidding. Tom, you're a good boy. And in the meantime, we're going to play this new album that we have here. It's called It's an album called Cry Baby. And the reason why I want to play this instead of the normal Reverend is because is that this is supposedly in the same vein, and it actually, the reviewer actually mentioned specifically the Reverend Horton Heat. And I just want to judge for myself. And maybe you could judge with me, because most of you are very acquainted with the Reverend. And so here we go. We're going to go with Ordinary Sun from the album Crybaby.